Last weekend, I first drove to Michigan and then flew with my 86-year-old dad down to South Carolina for my nephew's wedding. On the journey back, I had an epiphany in an airport elevator. I'm going to call it my elevated epiphany. So, with the assistance of a wheelchair and an airline attendant, my dad and I were transferring from one terminal to another at Detroit's Metro Airport. We went through that one of those long tunnels between the terminals and then got on board an elevator to go up to the departure gates. Just as the door was about to close behind us, a woman rushed into the elevator with a baby that she was pushing in a stroller. I'd say the baby was between 18 and 24 months old. So there we were in this elevator, me standing behind my dad in a wheelchair, the young mom standing behind her baby in a stroller, the attendant pushing the buttons of the elevator. My dad and the baby were maybe a foot apart, staring intently at each other. So it occurred to me that the care I needed to give to my elderly father on this trip was not unlike the care that this mother needed to give her baby on her trip. Both baby and my dad were certainly in very significant ways dependent on help from others. Neither could indeed travel alone. So there I am in the elevator. And suddenly, in a Hollywood sort of way, the elevator began to feel very crowded. I saw myself as a baby in a stroller being pushed by my much younger-looking dad or mom. Then I saw me as a younger man pushing my children in a stroller. And I saw me as a much older man in a wheelchair being pushed by my middle-aged kids. Then I saw my cousin 40 years ago pushed by his mom in a wheelchair after he fell off a roof and broke his neck. As the elevator door opened, I looked down and saw my real middle-aged body standing there with my dad in the wheelchair, and these other images faded away. So, this is where I am in my journey between birth and death, I thought. In an orderly life, we are cared for when we are young by our parents. We are mostly in good health until old age, and then we receive care from our kids or other caregivers. Through our life journeys, we alternate in these roles of caregiver and care receiver. Sometimes, though, life is not so orderly. Like my cousin with a broken neck, illness or injury can dramatically change the flow of things in our life. The only certainty is that in terms of our age and our health, whatever state we're currently in will change. Well, there's one other certainty. Death. The Titanic always does hit the iceberg. Sickness, aging, death. These three are inevitably part of our lives. So our lives flow from birth to death. Like a rushing river, the flow is seldom straight or placid. Where we are in that flow at any particular instant depends on many things, including, clearly, our age and the proportion in our life of sickness to health. The truth is that we are all in this transition called aging from the day we are born, and through our lives we flow in and out of states of sickness and health. Maybe more than anything else, the transitions of aging as well as sickness and health forcefully bring our attention to this question of identity that I talked about last month. This question, who am I now? If we answer that question with, I'm sick, I'm healthy, I'm dying, I'm aging, any of those answers really impact our self-understanding of who we are. For me, being a relatively healthy, middle-aged person right now certainly is part of my current self-understanding. And, of course, it's only part of who I am now. Just like for my dad, he is more than an older man with some health problems. Just like my cousin is more than someone who fell off the roof and broke his neck. We are more than these things, and yet they are important. Significant illness or injury can be a powerful impetus for change and transition in our lives. Think about the impact of a cancer diagnosis, for example. Certainly we know this can upend a life, and as significantly, it can trigger in a reordering on the inside, a refiguring of who we are as a person. Even if the treatment's successful, the cancer goes away, we're cancer-free for years and years and years, the internal changes from that illness are still with us. It's still part of who we are. The identity as cancer survivor is always part of who a person is if they've had cancer. So illness changes us. And I don't want to be Pollyannish and say, and it always changes us for the better. That's just not true. Most people who have been seriously ill would probably not say, you know, if I had my life to live over again and I had the power to choose, I'd say, yeah, let's bring on the illness again. You know, probably not. But often there is a silver lining in illness for folks, even when that illness is terminal. I think this is what Bernie Siegel was pointing to in the opening words today. Illness, as he said, can redirect our lives in meaningful ways. This week, in preparation for the sermon, we had a conversation on my Facebook page, and I really am so grateful for people who contributed to that conversation. One person in the conversation shared how cancer redirected her life. She shared that most significantly for her, her cancer experience helped her finally learn in a really deep way not to sweat the little things. And that most things are little, she finally figured out, even death. For her, the tumors are gone, but the wisdom from that insight lingers. One of the legacies of the illness for her is that it did transform her approach to life, and especially life's challenges. That's a deep gift from her cancer experience. I would say that our journeys through sickness and health and aging and ultimately to death, that it is a spiritual journey. It touches at the core of who we are and what we give our hearts to. A healthy, grounded spirituality can help us, I think, navigate this journey from cradle to grave. So I want to talk today a little bit of how I think that can help. First of all, how it cannot help. What spirituality cannot do is keep us ultimately from getting sick and dying. Sure, spiritual practices can help keep us healthier, help us recover from an illness. So, of course, can making healthy, good choices with how we live our lives, choosing not to smoke, for example, certainly has a positive impact on your health. But none of these things will ultimately ward off death. We know that. As another person on the Facebook page remarked this week, spirituality and our beliefs are not some kind of magic shell that keeps us from getting sick or having to die. Jody Kaser, through bad luck, bad genes, I don't know, but not through smoking, developed lung cancer. She's a highly spiritual person who has dedicated herself to making the world better where she lives and beyond where she lives, in Africa and in Central America. She's a person who I admire because she thinks locally, she thinks globally, but she acts locally and globally, which is pretty cool. The fact she got cancer is not her fault. All these good things she did to take care of herself and the world around her, that did not create a shield around her. I wish it could have, but spirituality cannot do that. Sooner or later, we're going to hit the iceberg. All that our spirituality can do is help us navigate through these ups and downs in life. It can help make a teacher out of illness and out of aging. That's all spirituality can do. And that's a lot. So, I want to talk about some ways that having an active, healthy spiritual life can help us as we navigate through life's illnesses, aging, and ultimately to death. One thing our spirituality can do is it can give us a vantage point on life. It can help us see the vantage point that illness gives us. Illness is amazing in that it can help us look at the terrain of our life where we've been, where we're headed. I imagine we all know folks who have had serious illnesses, maybe even brushes with death, who not only view life differently now, but live life differently because of this experience. Some of these deep changes, I think, come from this taking illness as a vantage point and from which to look at one's life. Using illness as a vantage point of view certainly came through in the Facebook conversation this week. What I want to lift up today, though, is I don't think we automatically see from the vantage point that illness offers. I think we have to be looking. We have to be paying attention. We have to be intentional. That's what spirituality is all about. So it doesn't create the vantage point, but it helps us see it, be truly open to it, to understand where we are in our lives. Perhaps more than anything else, spirituality also offers us some sense of balance. And balance is a pretty good trait to cultivate, especially when we're facing a period of illness or the challenges of aging. I think this is part of why meditation and prayer can be so beneficial to people who are ill. Finding balance, even after your ship has hit an iceberg and has taken on some water and may sink, even then, finding balance can be helpful to get through the experience in the best possible way. Spirituality can also help us cultivate a sense of resilience. I think a spiritual approach to life and resilience really go hand in hand. I continue to be amazed, I have to say, utterly and completely amazed at the spirit of resilience in people in this fellowship who are dealing with serious illnesses or the oncoming of death. I often wonder, where does that resilience come from? I think maybe at least it comes in part from an active spiritual life. And what I've observed is it doesn't really matter what the content of a person's spirituality is. So here, I've seen people who are atheists and Christians and Buddhists and pagans all across the map here. I've seen them find that resilience to keep going in an amazing way. There are so many teachers here in this congregation. And I think having an active spiritual life, a real spiritual life, a tangible spiritual life, not just something theoretical in the head, helps us be resilient in these difficult times. And then another key aspect of spirituality for me is relationship. And I think relationship is an important spiritual tool when we're dealing with an illness, with accelerated aging. I find that my relationship to all that is most powerfully present in my relationship to people. So that relationship with people is a spiritual tool in healing, in dealing with illness, even in dying. And that came up again in our Facebook conversation this week. One person shared privately with me this week and said I could share this publicly with you, that in the wake of a really serious illness that might have killed him, he found a connection through a large virtual family on Facebook with folks who have the same illness that he has. And this is an illness that can strike all ages. The internet, I know, can be a source of disconnection, but it also can be a source of connection. For him, it has been. Members of this group give each other virtual hugs and comments of support when times get rough. Yeah, sure, this is a virtual thing, but it's also real. Hearing an encouraging, empathetic word from someone who has the same illness you have can be incredibly important for people. For this guy, even seeing pictures of someone in the group who has died can be heartwarming and uplifting. He also reports that two subgroups in this large virtual family have decided to make handmade sock monkey dolls out of an assortment of feeding tubes and IVs and bandages and send them to preschool kids who have the same illness. Can you imagine the power of being a preschool kid? You're surrounded by IVs and bandages and all this stuff, and someone has created this into a puppet for you? What a gift. You realize you're not alone. The virtual connection has become tangible. And of course, in illness, in our aging, There's also the connection with caregivers, be they family, friends, or people we pay. That's tremendously important, too. One person this week expressed the truth that illness takes an enormous toll on caregivers. Of course it does, and I don't want to pretend otherwise. I'm not trying to make caregiving some romantic thing here. It's hard. I bet a lot of us know people who have given care, and it's ultimately killed them. You know, couples where one's sick for so many years and then finally dies and the other gets sick and dies almost immediately after. It's hard. I know I really struggled in my caregiving role for my mom, which lasted all 30 hours, my role of being the medicine giver. 30 hours. You know, when I think of people who are there year after year after year, it's amazing to me. But in those 30 hours, it was hard. My mom, while still conscious, expressed in no uncertain terms just how horrible this medicine I was feeding her tasted to her. I understood because it was blue raspberry, and I despise root blue raspberry. I get it. My last real interaction with my mom when she was conscious was her begging me not to give her that medicine, crying. She was in pain. She needed the medicine. She didn't want the medicine. What a quandary for me. Thankfully, then I remembered her pulling Band-Aids off me. In spite of my protests, she would yank those off. Sometimes you do what needs to be done for a loved one. So the theme I want to lift up in this part of the sermon is connection. Feeling connected helps. It's part of our spiritual journey, I think. A member of our fellowship, Janine Knapp, works for Lutheran Social Services, and she's working on a wonderful project I want to share briefly about called Share the Care. The Share the Care model helps people access support for others who are in need or for themselves if they're in need. People with varying degrees of direct connection to a person are invited to be part of the team, the caregiving team. In this day and age when a lot of our extended families and even more immediate families are not near, it's important to think about how we want to put together teams of caregiving. This is a way to do it. Many people are honored to be asked to do their part, even people not all that closely connected to someone. So this program helps people assemble teams. I think it's amazing, and it's a spiritual approach to illness. I've asked Janine to share a little bit about it at the Wellspring Wednesday, so if you want to learn more about it, come to that. And then there's finally one other thing that spirituality can help us with as we go through these illnesses, health, aging, to death. And it is that life is what's going on now. Sometimes what is now is hard, when we are sick or dying, for example. But even in these times, we can seize the day and live to the fullest. One person on Facebook this week in my conversation reported receiving a terminal diagnosis a decade ago. Okay, turned out to be a bit premature. I think she was given a month. But she said the biggest realization from that experience was that you got to burn the good candles, as she puts it. Use the good china. Don't burn the bad candles because you want to save the good ones for another day. Don't use paper plates because you want to make sure the china never breaks. You never know if that other day is going to come. This is true for all of us. Everyone in this room, we all have terminal diagnoses, right? We do. Even if we are healthy today, full speed ahead, we may hit that iceberg tonight and be dead in the water before we know it. Tomorrow might never come. So why live partially today? We need to live fully today and every day. Burn the good candles today.